session number 28410, reel number 1.
In his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the This is the first taped interview with Kenneth Blythe in his home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 25th of the 7th, 2005, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. Kenneth, can we begin the interview by you telling us your full name and where and when you were born, please?
My name is Kenneth Alexander Blythe. I was born in Brisbane, the capital city of the state of Queensland in Australia, on the 16th of October 1916. I was born in a small maternity nursing home in one of the outer suburbs of Brisbane, not particularly far from the residence of my parents. I was the first child born to them.
Tell us a little about your parents, if you could.
My father was born in Australia of Scottish migrant parents who came to Australia around about 1860. He was born at Bulimba on the Brisbane River area of Brisbane in 1889. My mother was born in Brisbane, also in 1889, and her mother was an English migrant from the inner part of London who married a man named Alexander Monteith, who was born to an Alexander Monteith from Stirling in Scotland, and a mother named Anne Stevens, who was born probably near Taunton in Somerset and arrived in Australia in Sydney in 1832 on an old 300-ton whaling vessel which brought migrants to Australia after a five-month ocean voyage from Southampton or London to Sydney.
Tell us a little about your father. What was his occupation?
My father commenced work in Brisbane as a messenger for a produce merchant. The job entailed him riding a horse around Brisbane delivering invoices for his employer. And he left this job to begin work with a firm called R.S. Exton and Company Limited, who were paint and glass merchants, picture framers, and artist materials suppliers. Over the years, he filled the job of customs entry clerk for the firm and later became the city commercial traveller, marketing in the main mirrors and glass and paint to builders and furniture manufacturers. Initially, he had an Indian motorcycle and sidecar, which belonged to the firm. This was replaced with a Panhard Lavassier motor car, then followed a series of Model T Fords, which he used extensively to travel around visiting customers. We were also one of the few houses in the district which had a telephone, which was a manual phone on the wall and was used by him to phone customers at night seeking their orders for the materials he sold for his employer. My mother, Emily Maud Monteith, was, like her husband, born in the suburb of Brisbane, named Bulimba, on the Brisbane River, and they met fairly certainly at the local Presbyterian church. They were married after the war commenced, I think in the year 1915. That's the date of their marriage.
What do you recall of growing up?
My first memory was in 1919 in September, when I was 3 years of age. I had apparently been living with my grandmother and two maiden aunts at the suburb of Sandgate, whilst my mother was about to give birth to her second child, and I was taken by my aunt by rail from Sandgate to Wollan Railway Station, and then walked to my parents' home and across the road to Nurse Thomas's residence, where my mother had given birth to my new baby brother. I vaguely remember seeing my baby brother in bed with my mother, but more importantly, across the road was the then Kedron Park racecourse for horse racing, and a First World War aeroplane had landed there. My father took me across to look at the aeroplane and actually took a photograph of it with a camera borrowed from a friend.
Had your father been in the First World War?
My father had served in number 1 Horse Battery of the Australian Field Artillery with horse-drawn 15-pounder guns from 1906 to 1912. He did not, for reasons that is not apparent to me, serve in the First World War. He was a very keen artilleryman, rising to the rank of bombardier and described in great detail the visit by Lord Kitchener to Brisbane in January 1910, at which Kitchener complimented the 15-pounder gun battery on their skill at manoeuvring through Queensland scrub country at full gallop with the guns. Kitchener also recommended that the horses used by them should be permanent remounts and not hired horses, which proved difficult to manoeuvre due to their being unused to being harnessed in military equipment. It was ...1922... when I started school at a school called the Shorncliffe School on the banks of Moreton Bay near Sandgate, being at that time again a resident with my grandmother and grandfather and maiden aunts at Sandgate, quite possibly because of an illness of my brother. I started school at the Shorncliffe Infant School, and in January 1922, and moved to the Woolowin School not far from my home, approximately in May 1922. At the school, I remained at that school until I passed what was called the State Scholarship Exam in 1929. On a number of occasions during that period, I was sent to live with one or other of two uncles in the South Burnett district of Queensland, on their farm, and rode to school there on horseback and became very knowledgeable of facts of life which were in those days virtually unknown to city school kids. I became also a fairly skilled horse rider and was able to shoulder cattle from horseback, jump and take part in things like flag races and other things that were sport for young horse riders. This knowledge and skill at horse riding was one of the factors which prompted me, probably around about 1938, give or take a year, to join the 43 Field Battery of the Australian Field Artillery at Kelvin Grove in Brisbane.
You mentioned 1938, obviously coming close to the beginning of the Second World War. I wanted to talk to you about, you mentioned that your father hadn't served during the First World War. Did you have relatives that had?
Yes. My father's younger brother, Harold, served in the field artillery in France during the First World War, and was severely gassed, which had a fairly serious effect on his post-war health, to the extent that if I recall correctly, he ultimately died in 1947. Both my father and his brother, who served in the First World War, and another brother, all served in the field artillery pre-war. I think this was because there was compulsory military training in existence in Australia in those years. From the state school in 1929, having passed the scholarship exam, I spent 2 years at the industrial high school in Brisbane, which included most academic subjects plus various trade subjects. The only difference between it and other high schools was that the day was a longer one, and I think all told we had 11 separate subjects. I passed the Junior Public University exam, as it was then called, in November, December 1931, in 9 of the 11 subjects. This was the time of the Great Depression, 1930, 31, 32 in particular, so that when I set forth to look for employment early in 1932, there was no financial assistance whatsoever from any government. And I used to ride around with my father in his Model T Ford while he was visiting his customers, and at every opportunity I would try and get work. Ultimately, one Saturday morning in Eagle Street, Brisbane, which was what you would call the street occupied by many insurance companies and the like, my father was talking to a friend who had some lawn bowls equipment in his hand, and was talking to my father and said he had just been talking to a man who was looking for an office boy. This was May 1932 on a Saturday morning. I immediately dashed into the building to the place he had mentioned and applied for the job of office boy, and was given the job by the secretary of the Queensland Cane Growers Council, which was a statutory body but not a government department, which looked after the interests of the sugarcane farmers in Queensland.
I wanted to talk to you about growing up and your education and how people saw England here in Australia, in your case, Queensland. How was England seen during the war period, during the in-between war period, between World War One and Two?
Personally, I have very little recollection of any particular attitude to England, other than the fact that most people in Australia were direct descendants of early migrants to Australia from England, Scotland and Ireland. And also, I became aware that some of the pupils in the same class as me at school were new migrants from what was called the old country, which would have been either England, Scotland, Ireland, or Wales, or whatever. They were noticeable by their different clothing, mainly what you would call breeches instead of short pants, and caps rather than hats. And, of course, many had accents.
How was the king seen?
Every morning at school, there would be a parade before we marched into our classroom, and we would be called upon to salute the flag. We didn't exactly use a military form of salute. I'm not too sure. I think we just stood to attention and looked towards the flag on the flagpole. There was, in the early stages, our school reading books were clearly based on their English equivalents and included stories by people like Sir Walter Scott and other English authors, as well as Australian.
My impression is that, Australian history wasn't concentrated on. It was more looking back to the history of England.
Yes, I would say that at our schools we had geography lessons which included the geography of Australia and the rest of the world. And we were familiar with the existence of other countries and of England and its other
empire. In relation to England and relation to the connection between Australia and England,
our school atlas maps of the world showed the British Empire in red, and this included a very substantial part of the world. For example, India was red, Canada was red, Australia was red, etc.
So, did that explain to you as a young bloke why Australia had come to be involved in the First World War?
I'm not personally very capable of interpreting why Australians flocked to the First World War, other than that they felt that they were defending their home country, which was the United Kingdom and the British Empire, which included as far as Australia was concerned, parts of New Guinea and the rest of the red-coloured parts of the map.
So when, in the mid-30s, there's rumbling of a chap by the name of Hitler, and it looks towards the end of the 30s that, you know, war is fairly imminent, how then did you interpret all of that?
I became aware of the possibility of a war developing when, whilst serving in 43 Field Battery of the Royal Australian Artillery with horse-drawn guns, there was a recruiting campaign in Australia introduced by Billy Hughes, a politician famous for his work at the Versailles Peace Treaty in Europe at the end of the First World War. And he instituted a recruiting campaign to enlarge the then CMF, that's the Citizens Military Forces, or militia as we were called. This resulted in the need for officers and non-commissioned officers' numbers to be extended, and various night and morning courses were conducted at the barracks on a live-in basis, where you went to work from the barracks with a cut lunch of enormous size and reported back to the barracks at night for further training. As a result of this, I was promoted first to bombardier and then to sergeant, and became a sergeant in the artillery battery. We did our field training initially at a place called Mount Walker near Rosewood, where we did live firing.
What did it feel like to know there would be a second possible, that there was a possibility of a Second World War only 20 years after the first?
I'm not so sure that we felt any imminent danger of a Second World War. Most of us probably had joined the artillery as a means of escaping from home life at weekends, having an exciting experience, and being paid for it, albeit very little pay, but in the Depression years, anything was welcome. For example, most of my pocket money in my youth was obtained by trapping sparrows, which were a declared pest, and selling the heads to the Brisbane City Council for tuppence, 2 pennies each.
What was your knowledge of Hitler?
Well, part of our school curriculum at the state school before moving on to high school, the scholarship exam included what was called a miscellaneous paper. The miscellaneous paper was really based on your general knowledge acquired from reading newspapers, and you could be asked assorted questions. The newspapers at that time would occasionally have mentioned the rise of Hitler in Germany and his takeover in the period before 1939.
Did you understand much of his policy?
I